afternoon. You are joined in the second hour of We the People Radio. You can find all of our information at wethepeopleradio.us. Contact information for us if you have ideas for programs or ideas for sponsorship or any of those things. We need to do with the Parks and Forest Service guys. We'll take 100,000 to, what is it, 500 million or something. We need to up the ante.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to put out a better...
We have a much larger operating budget than we thought.
Much larger. We need to get that slush fund going, too. Good grief. So we're here with our guest, Jim Beers. He's a retired U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service wildlife biologist. A lot of wildlife in that. Sorry, it throws me every time. He was a special agent, a refuge manager, a wetlands biologist, and a congressional fellow. And got tons of information that goes way back. When did you start your career, Jim?
I went to work for the Fish and Wildlife Service when I got out of the Navy in 1967.
Oh, see, so you've been there and done that. You were there before the Endangered Species Act.
Yeah, in fact, one of the reasons that people find me as interesting, as they evidently do, because and they say, oh, you know so much. I started off in North Dakota for a couple of years, Minnesota for a year, a couple of years in Nebraska, a couple of years in New York City, and then I was in Washington for about 30 years. And all the time in Washington, especially starting in the early 70s, was overlapped. All of this, oh, we just passed an Endangered Species Act. Oh, we just passed the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Oh, we're just protected wild horses and burros. Oh, the EPA is starting off on doing this, that, and the other thing. Oh, and we're writing regulations now, and we're going to put wolves in. And all of that, I was in there doing various different functions and just curious myself, but, you know, going to coffee breaks with guys from the Endangered Species Office and talking to the law enforcement guys about what they had done over here. And I was... I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. But unlike a lot of the guys I worked with, and I don't say this to put them down, but I mean it's true, I'm more of a stubborn, aggressive...
I said with all due respect.
You know, I said that.
Yeah, and I mean, unlike them, I wasn't just bending over for all of this stuff that came down the pike. And I wound up getting crossways with a lot of the people that Clinton had brought in that were disguised as wildlife biologists and people concerned about natural resource use and management, but were in fact just absolute ideologue environmentalists and animal rights people. So things had changed under me, and I got to see it all, and I wound up, you know, where I was with people jumping off of elevators if I was on them and scared of it, and then police were brought in because I would be dangerous. They were going to fire me and all of this stuff.
Sounds
and
like
then
a VA.
Testifying before Congress. So I don't have any, you know, I don't have any lingering affections for anybody back there. I don't dislike them, but I mean, I don't.
Nobody has any lingering affections.
You know, yeah.
So, now I mean, the public has finally caught up with your sentiment.
Yeah. And I as I talk and go around the country and give talks and write things and communicate with people in Europe and Australia and everything about these matters, I've learned a lot and I've gained a lot of kind of gravitas about the topic because of my notoriety as I left the government. But things have changed dramatically in the context of the way the whole government and the whole nation has changed dramatically. And a lot of people have taken over various parts of the government in ways and done things with them that are not in our best interest at all. And this isn't just about hunting or fishing or that kind of thing. This is a much broader topical area. You know, I often get asked about EEO preferences, which I'm not a fan of, that the federal government put in place to give preferences for, based on sex and race,
right,
for contracting and for hiring and promoting. And they were put in place temporarily back in the late 70s, but they're still in place, and they still give people bonuses for them and everything. And they say to me, you know, what do you think about that? And for instance, I said, well, in my area of natural resource management, it was a big influx of people who did not know about natural resources, didn't care about natural resources, and in fact, for the most part, were opposed to the use of natural resources, opposed to logging, opposed to grazing, opposed to private property, opposed to hunting and fishing and all of these things. They felt strongly about that, and that was moved along as ideologues from the Defenders of Wildlife Humane Society and others like that got jobs in the government suddenly in the BLM and Fish and Wildlife and Park Service, and were dragging the government programs away from what they were formed to do into what we see today. And I said, it's really a little bit like if you and I were concerned about the Department of Defense. And 30 years ago, somebody had said, my gosh, do you know there are no Quakers in the Department of Defense? Somebody said, oh, really? And so they passed a law. They said, we will give you bonus money, all you SESers and other managers, for the more people you hire, promote, and transfer and give contracts to that are Quakers. And pretty soon, you know, you were hiring a lot of Quakers, and it's nothing against Quakers, but, you know, you're hiring a bunch of them and you're promoting a bunch of them. And
they make
suddenly
great furniture.
You believe that, you know, they bring a lot to the table and blah, blah, blah. And suddenly you turn around one day and you're, my gosh, 70-80% of the Defense Department are Quakers and they don't believe in fighting. I mean, you say, well, that, I didn't want to do that. But that's exactly what we've done in this natural resource area and in other areas of the government as the politicians have more and more manipulated the system in the last 50, 60, 70 years for their own personal advantage rather than the national interest. Less and less restrictions from the Constitution and less protection of property rights and other constitutional rights. Just take guns. I mean, just look at guns for one thing. And the way that's gone downhill, if you will, with the government, I mean, I'm still amused as every time we get new politicians in or they get new appointees, the first thing they do is they got a picture there with their wife or their husband. They're holding their hand up. I swear to uphold the Constitution. They turn around and go back to their office and spend the next 8 years trying to get rid of the Second Amendment, for instance.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're going to do that, you know, have a constitutional convention, do it right. But that's not what they're doing. I mean, that's just one example of many. And if they can do that with, just say that one, they can do it with freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion, all of that. So, I mean, this is a big subject that we're dealing with here, and it goes way beyond the IGs turning out to be pretty crooked, which they are for the most part, and the way we don't audit anymore. I mean, these are really serious problems in and of themselves, but they enable this larger cultural rot, if that's an acceptable term, that's going on all around us. And, I think all of us need to do what we do best in the areas that we know best to try to offset that and stop it, you know. So anyhow, that's what kind of drives me in a lot of this subject area. And once you get me going, I mean, I've got all kinds of stuff that I can recall and bring up to you know, that can help others understand what's going on, just like we're doing here with concessions and the GAO and the way the money is no longer really overseen, seizure
well,
money.
It's
and
funny
that,
because even if they expose it, have a situation up on the Klamath where the Bureau of Reclamation was, I mean, I guess if you want to say busted, outed anyway by a GAO report that basically said of all the projects that Reclamation's in charge of in the entire country, the Klamath is the only one that has not received, that has not done an accounting. And it hasn't done an accounting since 2001.
Wow.
2001. They said, well, we have lease lands, and that makes it complicated, so it's hard, and, you know, we just haven't been able to do it. Really?
Well, my guess would be that it's because it's such high profile, keeps jumping in and out of the news all the time, that they can't afford to have an audit. But by the same token, you've got people saying, well, this is a government thing. What's going on in there? We want to see an audit, you know, and what you and I are talking about is they really don't do audits anyway anymore, even an accountability report.
No, but see, without an accounting, the irrigators up there can't buy back their works.
Mm-hmm.
See, so it keeps the Bureau in charge of the entire
yep.
project. No,
that's right.
No privatization can occur. So it's a mm-hmm. it's a neat deal, and as long as they hold everybody hostage with that, they can, you know, we might have to turn your water off if you keep doing
yep.
that. You don't sign our contract the way we wrote it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of this stuff used to be called, mob tactics. I don't know if we've gotten away from that term, but that's kind of what it is. They've got everybody kind of hostage. Hey, Bob, do we have to take a swift break? Otherwise, we'll be behind the whole time again. And we have a lot to cover. We want to know about endangered species, Jim. Talk to us about that when we come back. And I mean, most of us have watched this change, but...
Also want to know about invasive species. We have somebody in the chat that wants to know.
Invasive species, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're all kind of the same. Anyway, we'll talk about all that Chuck when we come back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
With so many lies, you twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Late last night, I had a crazy dream. I met a man who invented a money machine. He said, I know things are tight and times are tough, but he'd give me the machine if I give you up. I just looked him in the eye and I said, no thanks, honey, your love's better than money in the bank.
A lot of songs about money, apparently. It's a show about rotten government. Okay, Mr. Beers, what about these endangered species? We know it's ruined our lives, but maybe you could tell us, you know, your perspective.
We've seen this coming for years, where we're at now, and it's going to get even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Let me run you through a real quick little calendar here. 1917, the federal government took over authority over 212 species of migratory birds because they put them on a treaty with Canada, and it was ratified by the Congress, or by the Senate, and signed by the President, and therefore it became the law of the land. By 1940, the bald eagle was not on that original treaty. 1940, the Congress just passed a law that said bald eagles are now protected by the federal government, blah, blah, blah. And then, on top of that, 1969, in the first Endangered Species Act, the eagle was put on the act, even though there's eagles all over the place. And in 1972, or in 73, there was a very stronger Endangered Species Act issued, and the Fish and Wildlife Service had the authority, all of a sudden, to list any animal or plant they wanted and to take property without compensation, to force states to do certain things or stop doing certain things and do everything that you could remember hearing about, from stopping grazing to stopping irrigation use. This is all with one species, okay? And then in the 1980s, they set up special eagle feather accommodations for Indian tribes. Only Indian tribes could get feathers, and they opened up a feather repository up in Idaho. And Indians could get feathers, but not any other person, to use for religious purposes or whatever. And they had a lot of feathers because there were a lot of dead eagles picked up here, there, and everywhere. So they gave the Indians certain privileges there in the law by regulation. Because you notice that by now, the federal government no longer has to have a treaty. It no longer has to go through Congress. They've just devolved all of that authority to do whatever they want down to the agencies, in this case, the Fish and Wildlife Service, that let's just take the feather issue. In the 1980s, they put together regulations in a feather repository to give Indians special consideration with feathers. But yet, 2 years ago, a wolf, an endangered wolf, wandered across the ice on Lake Superior onto an Indian reservation in Minnesota. It was coming from Isle Royale National Park, and this endangered wolf was shot and killed on the refuge.
Oh,
on
my
the reservation.
Gosh.
No.
Oh, yeah, it was terrible. Anyway, the federal government jumped in there, and they were going to find out who did this, and they found out that it was shot and killed by an Indian living on the reservation. So they just quietly, on their own, said, well, we don't want to prosecute him. We'll talk to the tribal elders, and the elders said, oh, this is terrible. We will initiate education and see that this doesn't happen again. Thank you very much, and they went home. If that was you or me that they caught, had shot the wolf, you'd be out whatever.
You'd be talking behind bars right now.
Of course. Yeah, my wife would be sending me cigarettes and files and a cake. And, you know, at the same time right now, we've got, there was an article in the paper the other day here that said that the federal government, Fish and Wildlife Service, is going to let wind turbine operators kill up to 4,200 bald eagles a year. And they don't have to report the data or share the data with anybody in the public. So there's no, we don't even know what they're killing.
Seems reasonable.
Yeah, what? Why not? Yeah, so I'm sure they're going to follow that. It's kind of like the Indian tribes that that count their own fish take.
Yeah.
They self-regulate.
But think about how far we've come just in our jurisprudence and our turning over authorities, incredible, unconstitutional authorities to bureaucrats in the last 100 years. From the days when you had to have a treaty, it had to be signed by the president and ratified by the Senate, to, well, you know, it looks like it was killed by one of the Indians here, and we don't want to prosecute that. I mean, that's how far we've come, and now we're letting wind turbine operators get a 30-year permit to kill up to 4,200 bald eagles a year.
Yeah,
now, they would have put you and me in prison if they ever caught me shooting a bald eagle and keeping the feathers from it or whatever I'd want to do with an eagle, you know, boil it up and make a purlew out of it or whatever. I mean, they would have put me in jail and enormous fines.
Well, now, it tastes like chicken, I hear.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, here these wind turbine operators get this all of this special attention from the government. At the same time, the government's shutting down coal mines and coal mine operators and fracking and pipelines and everything else. I mean, that's how interrelated and how bad things have gotten.
And in the meantime, China's shutting down all their wind farms and all that. I mean,
China is?
Oh, yeah, they're getting away from it because it's costing too much money. There's no return on it.
Huh. Imagine that. We'll never figure that out.
No.
Well, so how much is the endangered species used to puff up the agencies?
Oh, I mean,
is it as bad as we think?
No, it's even worse. I mean, for the last 30 years, the whole accounting of the endangered species money and activities has been kept purposely just a mishmash of record keeping. And anymore, I don't even know if they have to bother anymore because there's no audits anymore. But that's purposely been closed so that or kept obfuscated. Because if I was a law enforcement guy getting paid for sport fish in law enforcement or migratory waterfowl law enforcement, they've been using guys like that for years to do endangered species things. And the same with people in offices and people, biologists. It isn't just the guy who's got the title, oh, I'm the wolf coordinator for the region or something. It's the law enforcement people. It's the contracting people. It's the refuge people in the area and everything that are all doing that work. And eating up, just like they're doing at the state level now, state resources for people and dollars that were put there and are obtained, like in the state, from license money from hunting or fishing or the excise taxes collected on arms and ammunition or fishing tackle. That's all being used now to do things, anti-hunting things, to have put lead bans in place and make hunting more and more restrictive and stop stocking of fish and all kinds of things, just the opposite of what the money is there for. Endangered species has been an absolute big sucking sound for 30 years in the Fish and Wildlife Service for money that was only given for research purposes or refuge management purposes or law enforcement purposes unrelated to endangered species. But endangered species is the big hammer for these environmentalists and animal rights people that have a vision of the federal government no longer supporting logging, no longer supporting grazing, no longer supporting hunting or fishing or any of these other things, and the land all shut down, the federal government land all shut down into wilderness enclaves that can burn, and then we're all supposed to celebrate when it burns because that's natural, and when the wolves come out of it and chomp down on some kid walking his dog, that's the kid's fault and all of this stuff. They really are working towards that long-term goal, and part of that goal is that somehow these agencies, state and federal, will get, once all of this money that was originally intended to support them is gone, that somehow all of us are going to dish up appropriated money through the federal government to give to the agencies, to give to the right people out there to do research and interpretive work and sort of drive around and look at things and conduct law enforcement around the edges so that nobody goes in there. That's the sort of mad dream that underlies all of this, and it's a very difficult matter. When you say, where's the money, not only what we talked about for the last hour and a half here is a problem getting at it, but they've purposely covered that up. I see that here in Minnesota all the time. They're spending money right and left all the time on wolves that they don't get any money for. So where do you think those people are getting paid from that are out there driving around, that are answering this rancher's request for somebody to come out and take a look at the three dead cows and two calves that have been eaten up by wolves? What, you know, who do you think's paying for all that stuff? It's certainly, there's no wolf revenue, but there's all this babysitting of wolves and putting satellites on them and everything. And the federal government's got such a scam going. Consider that they put the wolf on the Endangered Species Act to begin with, and in the 1990s started forcibly interjecting them into states that didn't want them. And then they say our goal in your state is 100 wolves. And they go 200, 300, 400. And you can't count them anyway.
No, that worked out good in Yellowstone.
Yeah, exactly. The numbers go way up, and the elk are gone, the moose are gone, but they're in the back country, according to the Park Service.
Yeah, right.
You know, but I mean, that's what they tell the visitors. And when the numbers get up there, they say, well, we're going to turn this back over to the state now. The state, if they give us a plan that we approve, we will turn it over to them. And, well, they never quite get there. And even if you do get return management, it's in accordance with the plan they oversee, and they can reject at any time. So you've got all these wolves that supposedly you've got to answer the depredations calls on, and you've got to hunt down some that tried to kill a kid or hanging around school bus stops or going into town at night. You got to do all this babysitting and running them down and killing a lot of them and all of this transporting them out into the wilderness nonsense and all this stuff. And who do you think pays for that? Mm-hmm. Where do you think that money comes from? It's money, first of all, they divert from the elk management and the deer management programs and the upland game bird management programs and the fishery program, the fish stocking program, and the law enforcement program that's intended to oversee poaching and other things for these game animals and game fish. It's all getting diverted over into this bottomless pit of hiring more people to do more wolf work because it's so important. And the state doesn't have the money to just, dig into and say we're going to sell license plates and do it or something. I mean, it doesn't work that way.
We'll jack the entrance fee to our parks up to $100 a car. That'll do it.
That'll help.
You bet.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, even California here a few years back, they changed it. Now they're the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We wouldn't want to have game in the name because...
Exactly. Well, that's going on all over the country.
Yeah.
And so the
game is gone.
Your dad and your grandpa knew that worked on the Fish and Game Department, they were some of the finest people in the small town they grew up in and everybody respected. They're long gone. They're gone. The people that are working there now might as well be working for insurance companies and just told that, listen, you stop paying money on these kind of injuries and you tell them this and you tell them that, even though it's going to shaft somebody's family big time, that's your job. If you don't like it, get out of here. Well, that's what they've got, only they've got ideologues in there that all agree with this egregious stuff that we're talking about. How can they get away with this? How can they do that? That's because the government's so full of these kind of people. And the politicians have turned over all this authority to the bureaucracy.
And unfortunately, these aren't people that we've elected. These are people that have been appointed.
Well, the person you elect is whoever the head of the executive branch is. So whether it's the president or the governor or whatever, but man, that's a lot of power to be concentrated in one chair.
Well, the flip side.
The mistake of thinking that they're appointed and they're brought off the street and just put in there and then sent out. There's a few like that. But most of them are like the director of the Fish and Wildlife Service right now, who at one time was working up on Capitol Hill as a Democrat activist staff director for a big House committee. And when Newt Gingrich and those guys came in, they got rid of him and his job within 2 months. Boom, you're out of here. Fish and Wildlife Service picked him up as an employee, just like me off the street. Although he didn't have to compete for anything. He was just given a big job at the time. He was the guy in charge of the excise taxes when they stole them. And when Bush came in, he took this guy who had this big job and was there and was documented in an audit, General Accounting Office audit, in 1999 that money was stolen. He was kept down by the Bush people as a science advisor. down the hall from the director's office, sitting in a little room with a phone where he could get together with all of his Democrat buddies. And when Obama got elected, they made him director. Okay, so, I mean, you're talking about, you know, you say, oh, Beers was an employee. Well, these guys are employees, too.
Yeah, no Absolutely. Kidding,
and
except...
Employees, you know, it's all mixed up in a jumble.
Well, it's interesting. Somebody was telling me that forest supervisors no longer have to have any forestry degrees. They can have degrees in liberal arts and be a forest supervisor now. It's like,
exactly.
That would explain.
The university saw that coming. They saw that coming, and they don't teach that stuff anymore.
Right, which is why we have degrees in lesbian studies, and everybody says, well, how are you going to get a job for that? Well,
exactly.
We just figured it out.
Yep.
We need to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with Jim Beers. This is your two-minute option to get your blood pressure under control. And then we'll be back again for more of the roller coaster ride. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
$1.50 just to see 'em. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
Bob, you're reading my mind. Reading my mind. It's freaking me out. Because I was just going to ask Jim about this one part of his talk that he did up in Spokane. It says, the court has directed the U.S. Fish and Wildlife to take into account global warming forecasting and reopen efforts to list the wolverine under the Endangered Species Act. What about that, Jim?
Yeah, are you familiar with what a wolverine is?
Yeah.
It's kind of a big weasel.
Yeah,
you know,
mean weasel.
Big angry weasel, yeah.
Yeah, and there's never been a lot of them. There never is a lot of them anywhere. They're kind of loners, and they have a big home range, and they get in fights with one another or whatever. And they come and they go, historically, for centuries, with the weather. As it gets colder, you'll see them further and further south in areas. As it gets warmer, they go back north. They don't really go back north, but you find them further north. And that's just the way they are. And the Fish and Wildlife Service has tried numerous times to get the darn thing listed. And they're trying to use this global warming nonsense as something that they've got to fight against in order to keep the wolverine, which is nonsense. There's going to be plenty of wolverines up through Canada and up into Alaska for as long as any of us are around. But by the same token, they've got fur records, and I've seen this back when I was working in Washington, that show that wolverine skins hides were sold in Indiana when it was a territory. So they're going to be prepared to make a motion or put out the idea that wolverines were once around the Great Lakes, and wolverines were across the northern plains in the Dakotas and Minnesota.
Oh God, we have to reintroduce wolverines.
Blah, 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 blah. And with them being a wide-ranging animal like they are, kind of like a bald eagle is, you can say, oh, they need all that habitat over there. They need all those trees, and you can't graze in there, and you can't have people go in there. You can't drive through there. All this stuff, that's all it is. It's just a big power grab, and they're the kind of species that you get a whole lot of power out of. A little different than a snail darter that lives in one little stream that flows into the Tennessee River, even though you're trying to stop a dam. But, I mean, once you say wolverines are listed, I mean, it's as far as the eye can see in every direction that they can claim wolverines were once here and should be here again. Which is the way, when I say that, think of what I said, because the Endangered Species Act has turned very quickly and is just thoroughly nothing but a Native Species Restoration Act. In other words, wolves are endangered because they used to be here. We haven't seen any for 200 years here because they killed them all, but that's where they belong. So we're going to put them back in there, even though this is all farms and ranches and kids going to catch school buses and that stuff. We're going to put them in there because that's what we're about. We're going to save them. But saving is nothing but this whole nonsensical nature worship thing about native species. And another synonym for these non-native species is what you asked about earlier, invasive species. Invasive species, the way they're defined and the way they're talked about and the way they will be enforced if they ever get that legislation passed that gives new authority to the federal government of bureaucrats for invasive species, is non-native species. Anything that is where it wasn't here when Columbus hit the beach, or that wasn't here when the Indians were running around, is really invasive, and we got to get rid of it. So when they talk about getting authority for that, they go on at great lengths before Congress about killer bees and brown tree snakes and kudzu and zebra mussels, and they got to save the world or we're all going to get buried. But really what's going to happen is they're going to start right off if they get that authority, and they're going to go after pheasants and brown trout, which were brought over here from Europe and from Asia for purposes of fishing and hunting. Muskies in the south, they don't belong down there. They never were there. Great Lakes salmon, we're going to get rid of those out of there. The West Coast stripers, get rid of them. Walleyes in the west, chuckers, sika deer, doesn't matter if the state wants them and that you hunt them. We're going to get rid of them because that's what we got to do. Now, this is the same bunch that for 80 years, Fish and Wildlife Service has had the authority and the responsibility to keep what they call injurious wildlife out of the United States. They should not allow the importation of any injurious wildlife. And what have they just done in the last few years?
Yeah.
They allowed pythons and boa constrictors to just come in to be sold in pet stores.
Yeah, look at Florida. I was just reading where they have African crocodiles there now.
Exactly. But not only that, but they're the ones that let the Asian carp in, the ones that are destroying the Mississippi River and the Illinois River, and we're spending millions of dollars a year in Chicago, supposedly with electronic fish weirs and all this, to keep them from getting into the Great Lakes, when all it takes is some disgruntled guy with a five-gallon bucket to go get a couple of them, catch a couple of them, walk around to Gary, Indiana, and dump them into the lake, and you're off to the races. They let those be imported. The Asian carp were imported by the catfish farmers who wanted them to keep their ponds clean of scum and algae and that, which they do very well, except why? Catfish farms are in low drainages near water. Why, that's where it floods every year. So any genius would know that within a year or two of putting
they're going to be everywhere.
You're going to have a flood. They're going to be in the stream. They're going to be down in the river. They're going to go up the river, down the river, everywhere they can get. And 95% of all of the fish biomass in the Illinois River now is these Asian carp.
Hey, Jim, what do you know about the porcupines out here in the West? You know, we used to have porcupines everywhere, and you hardly ever see them anymore. And I was told that Forest Service had a campaign to kill all the porcupines because they were eating the tops out of trees or something. You know anything about that?
No, I don't. I don't know anything about that at all. But I know that
the rumor persists.
Go ahead.
No, the rumor persists.
Oh, yeah.
Can't be disproven.
Well, we've got porcupines here, and there have not been a lot of them in the last few years that I've noticed anyway. I used to see them quite more often 30 years ago when I would come here to my mother's place and spend time in northern Minnesota in the summer.
See them all the time out in California. I lived out in the country, and we saw porcupines all the time, but I haven't seen them in 25,
last time I saw
years.
One, he got hit by a trash truck out in front of our house in Eureka.
Huh.
He could, I know one thing. A porcupine can't outrun the garbage man.
Yeah.
That's my wildlife fact for the day.
Homeschool kids either.
So, what would you consider the worst invasive species we've got going right now?
Oh, I think there are quite a few species that we should be concerned about, and the zebra mussels and some of these snails that have come in. And the truth is, the federal government has a role to play here. Number one, I know that a lot of these came in bilge water and on hulls and everything. But number one, they got to stop importations or anywhere that they're coming in that they can. That's their job. Secondly, if they want to get involved in control of these particularly nasty species, there's nothing stopping the Fish and Wildlife Service or the Park Service from requesting money from the Congress to spend on research about better controls for zebra mussels, say. But the truth is they aren't going to do that because it's not money for the Park Service or Fish and Wildlife Service. It's money that they would have to share with the state people eventually to solve a state problem because that's who's got the problem. And if the federal government won't give the Park Service and Fish and Wildlife Service authority over those species, they're not going to ask for any money for it. But in a perfect world, the federal government should be working on some solutions in cooperation with the state governments, not just to give them money, but to find solutions. And some of them are going to be kill them solutions, which is something that these days we don't kill anything.
Yeah, we don't seem to have the capacity to do that.
No, but that's where you've got to be going with a lot of this stuff. You're going to have to be looking at sprays and some chemicals here and that to get rid of what you got here and come up with programs down the road that minimize as much as we can in this world of transshipment and trade agreements and everything else.
Oh, sure.
And boxes coming and going, you know, keeping them out of here. But I think zebra mussels are a real problem, but, you know, I'm living in Minnesota. And killer bees are a problem in the South, and the degree to which they're still spreading, I don't know. Yeah, brown tree snakes are over in Guam, and I know they're worried about them in Hawaii because they got into Guam on World War II airplanes coming from New Guinea, and they can be spread by other means to other places. So there's a lot of things that the federal government could look at and work on some of the areas that they're managing. And they could help the states work on, and then let the states work it out there. And if the states want to work out cooperative programs with the federal government, I think that should be something that's up to them. But,
I want to ask you about financing, too, when we come back. I've got to take a quick break, but I've noticed that a lot of the state programs that don't have the funding to do some of this stuff, they seem to always get these grants from Federal Fish and Wildlife, and it seems to be a pretty cozy relationship there in a lot of cases, that winds up hurting us. So we'll talk to Mr. Beers about that when we come back. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Neil Diamond.
It was Neil Diamond? Sounded like
was.
Him. What was it called?
Porcupine Pie.
That's the name of it?
Yes.
Okay, that's funny. Who knew? Of course you knew there was a Porcupine song. That's funny. All right, so Mr. Beers, what didn't we talk about?
Well, you mentioned that you wanted to talk about funding.
Yeah. What about all this cozy back-and-forth funding?
Well, it's been going on for years now, and it's the way the federal government, just like it's co-opted the auditors we talked about earlier, the private contractors, it's the way they co-opt the state fish and wildlife agencies. Not only do those agencies get more and more dependent, like the universities, on federal money and federal grants and do the federal government's bidding. You know, if I tell you, listen, we're looking for a fish here, we got to stop this dam that's going in, blah, 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 and you're an ichthyologist at some state university in that area, and we sit down and talk with you about that, that guy's going to get the signal pretty quick that if he wants to get some grant money, he's going to come up with a minnow or whatever in that area and talk about how there's only 1,500 of them left in the whole world, and they're blind, and they need the government's help. And he will get money. He will get graduate students. He will get tenure quicker, just like the State Fish and Wildlife Agency guys, if they're really good, may get more money in their programs in the state government for monitoring the health of wolf puppies or some nonsense. And they will maybe, if they do a good job, get offered a job in a year or two with the federal government, which would give them a better retirement and more security, blah, 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 and all this. So the federal government is just manipulating all these various forces in hidden ways that have great impact on all of us. I mean, great impact. You know, you're not a scientist. What do you know about this minnow? Well, I don't think it's right. Well, we don't care about that because you're just an ignorant redneck, see? I'm Professor Beers. I've got all these degrees right here. And I've, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and there you're sitting there in front of the judge, you know, kind of scratching your ear and your nose and, you know, well, thank you very much, you know.
Well, better than that, you get to go to the public meeting where they use the Delphi technique on you, and you get to sit at a little table with magic markers and give your, quote, public input.
Yep.
That goes directly into the garbage can.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because decisions already
been
made. But
then they can turn around and brag about it, how we had 700 people come in, and we looked at their comments and reviewed them, blah, 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 blah.
Which they totally don't.
Oh, exactly. I often get asked the question when I go somewhere, Mr. Beers, I'm going to go to a meeting that they're having at the Capitol about blah, blah, blah. Do you have any advice? I said, you know, you're going to lose. I said, what do you think? I said, you're exactly like some grade school or high school team going up against a professional baseball team. I said, these guys and gals running that meeting do it for a living. They've been doing it for years. They go to classes that last a week or two on how to do it. They go to coffee with each other and say, you know, I had one stand up the other day and say, blah, blah, blah. And what I did was I said, well, law enforcement, come on over here, blah, blah, whatever, you know. It really worked, or it didn't work. I tried that, but it didn't work. I mean, they're all honed up on this stuff, and you're just like a lamb going to a coyote convention, going to the thing, really. I mean, that's the truth.
Yeah, you know, we just see this all the time, and it's more and more and more like, I mean, Coho salmon just sends me into orbit. You know, we can buy it at Costco, but just on the Klamath River, it's endangered.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes no sense.
Well, it's the government gave the authority to the bureaucracy, the Fish and Wildlife Service, to make that determination. They can go to they can not only go to the ones in the Klamath, they can go into the one up, the little Klamath stream, North Klamath stream, that goes up into the Jim Beers channel, that goes up into the Aaron Ryan, you know, drop off thing and say, oh, these right over here are very unique and we gotta, yeah.
That's right, and they died in the Bill Cundiff puddle and now it's $25,000
exactly.
A head.
Exactly. But I mean, we laugh about that, but they can do it.
No, they are doing it.
You know, they can say that just these animals in that county are the ones that are endangered.
I like it when they endanger bushes, too. That's one of my favorites. Oh, sorry, we only have a minute left.
Well,
we can't possibly list all these.
Congressman Pombo elected in California, you know, was the bushes on a dike, and they wouldn't let him take the bushes out of there and because a butterfly might come by and use them, and that dike broke and killed some people. And they got Pombo elected for two elections. But then he got unelected because they went into the church parking lots before his third election and put all kinds of papers on the cars saying that Pombo really supported abortion and supported same-sex marriage, blah, blah, which was not true. But they did that just before the election, and nobody ever got prosecuted for it. And people said, oh, I'm not going to vote for him if that's true. So,
yeah, and he went after, because he went after ESA, which is what kind of cows everybody.
Exactly, yep.
Jim, well, we could do this pretty much every week for an endless period of time because we basically got nowhere here. So we'll be doing this again. you
well,
will be coming back. We're going to make you. So thanks very much for spending your afternoon with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for asking.
Folks, you can find all sorts of information. I would suggest you sign up for Jim Beer's email newsletter. Find it on our website, right on the page for this show, wethepeopleradio.us.